Jesse Corcoran Podcast.
Just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous, don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest disc jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over.
Wednesday, the 14th of July edition of the J.C. Corcoran Podcast here at jcontheline.com. You know, a couple of days ago, they arrested a bunch of people. I think it was like three guys and a woman in a hotel very, very close to Coors Field, where the Major League Baseball All-Star Game was played last night. And the initial stories, which turned out to be true, because it turned out that it was just a drug deal, and the fact that they had guns was related to the drug deal, but initially they thought that maybe somebody was trying to stage one of those Vegas type riots, where there was a hotel directly across the street from a place where there were thousands of people, you know, like they did in Vegas a couple of years back. And now you got the Major League Baseball All-Star Game, and they thought that what they were going to do was sit there and then knock out the windows and then start shooting people from the hotel in Coors Field across the street. Turned out that was not the case, but for a while there, that's what they thought. The only thing I can say is, based on what I saw last night, if that ever does happen, please, to the assassins, this is a message, a plea to the assassins, make sure that the first person you take out is that girl sitting behind home plate last night who had the best seats in the house. Row one, behind home plate. And I never saw her face because she never looked up. She was staring down at her phone the entire time. So take her out first, will you please? Now, of course, in St. Louis, we have this long-standing policy of when a player who is played for the St. Louis Cardinals for many, many years and really played his heart out and became a fan favorite, and then either gets traded or leaves, whatever the case may be, is now playing with a new team. When that player comes back to Busch Stadium for the very first time, we go nuts. We do the standing ovation. The guy usually tears up a little bit. Yadi goes out and stands in front of the plate, make sure that nothing happens until he believes that the response from the crowd has subsided. And it's one of those great things in American sports and certainly the game of baseball. It turns out they do it in other places too. At least they did last night. Coors Field in Denver last night, site of the Major League Baseball All-Star Game. And returning to the park, one Mr. Nolan Arenado.
Look at what's going on here in Denver, Colorado. In this matchup right here with Arenado against Shohei Ohtani, these guys are having a blast, and Arenado is having a moment here in Denver.
Classy move by Ohtani, giving him his moment.
They didn't want him to go, and for good reason. He's been an RBI machine, Nolan Arenado. He's as good at third base as you'll ever see.
And the American League beat the National League for the eighth straight time last night in the All-Star game. Shohei Ohtani story played out more in the pregame show, more in the hype leading up to the game than it actually did in the game, but he is really, really something to watch. Again, last night, and I've talked about this a million times before, I do not understand this pregame stuff at American sports outdoor venues, football games and baseball games. I guess that's it. You bring out the giant flag, everybody sings the Star Spangled Banner, and at the end you have the military flyover, which I do not understand. I don't understand why we fly military jets over the stadium at the end of the national anthem. What is that message? We just sort of do it without thinking about it. And I don't know what the original message was, and I don't know what the message is now. Okay, everybody, watch from all over the world. How do you think this looks in foreign countries? Just go to the other side of the world, and for whatever reason, they're watching the Major League Baseball All-Star Game. We sing the Star Spangled Banner, and then the jets fly over. We know that on May Day in the former Soviet Union, when they bring out all the military hardware and march it, they have these big marches through the streets of downtown Moscow, and then these giant military installations, these things, these big pieces of machinery and everything come, sailing down the main street. And I know when we saw that, and we saw it in person back in, I guess it was 1990 when we went to Russia, and it's sort of scary. Now, let me rephrase that. It's very scary. And that only happens once a year. In America, we got these military flyovers, especially when you start getting into playoff season in the NFL and the Major League Baseball All-Star Game and then the playoffs in the World Series. That happens all the time. I've been saying this for years. The national anthem of this country should be America the Beautiful. The Star Spangled Banner, if you really look at it, it's sort of like the message is, bolstered by the military flyover, don't fuck with us or we'll bomb the shit out of you. I think that message has been played out and proven and reinforced plenty of times in the last couple of generations. I don't think we need to reinforce it around the country or around the world. And they got this, beautiful for spacious skies and amber waves of grain, for purple mountains majesty above the fruited plain. What a beautiful song about America. We don't want that one. We want the bombs bursting in air. It's too bad, really. I talked about that on over-the-air radio about 15 years ago, and people started attacking me. They're just attacking me, accusing me of being anti-American. All right, we got the nominees for the 73rd Emmy Awards. They were announced yesterday. The Crown, The Mandalorian, tied for the lead with 24 nominations each. WandaVision is third with 23. The Handmaid's Tale and Saturday Night Live tied for fourth with 21 each. I'm going to tell you something here in a minute. I'm going to remind you of something I told you a long time ago. Just hold on here. As for which networks did the best, well, the Emmys aren't doing their tallies like that anymore. It's sort of a depressing sign of the times. They're counting up nominees by corporate overlords. Here's the example. Disney is at the top of the heap with 146 nominees. Their empire includes Disney Plus, ABC, Hulu, FX, Freeform, and the National Geographic. Warner Media, which includes HBO, HBO Max, CNN, TBS, and Adult Swim, came in second with 138 nominations. 130 of them are from HBO and HBO Max. Netflix finishes third with 129, followed by NBC Universal with 56 and Viacom CBS with 54. Now, maybe it was the first time I saw this kid on Saturday Night Live, this Asian kid, Chinese-American, Bowen Yang, and I said, this guy is going to be a superstar. He is going to be a superstar. And yesterday, he became the first Chinese-American man to be nominated in a supporting actor category for Saturday Night Live. Courtney Cox could win an Emmy as a producer of the Friends reunion special. During the entire run of the series, she's the only one of the six main cast members who was never nominated for one. And this could get interesting. Felicia Rashad is nominated for playing Carol Mama C. Clark on This Is Us. After her enthusiastic support of Bill Cosby, how is the crowd going to react if she wins? We got a couple of other ones that I just really love the idea of. I love Adi Bryant from Saturday Night Live. She got a Best Supporting Actress nomination, as did Cecily Strong, as did Kate McKinnon, which is a shame because all three of them, it appears, have left Saturday Night Live. So they go out on style. Conan got a nod for Outstanding Variety Talk Series? Really? As did Stephen Colbert. Colbert got 8 nominations yesterday. The Daily Show with Trevor Noah got a nomination, as did Jimmy Kimmel. And last week, Tonight with John Oliver, who seems to win every year. Got a couple other showbiz bits here. Gillian Anderson is prepared to let nature take its course. She says she's officially done wearing bras.
Show me boobs!
That's right. Show me boobs. She says they're too uncomfortable. Here's the quote. I don't wear a bra anymore. I can't wear a bra. I'm sorry. End quote. She's 52 years old. She explained in an Instagram live video Monday. I don't care. Here's the quote again. I don't care if my breasts reach my belly button. I'm not wearing a bra. It's just too fucking uncomfortable. End quote. She was met with praise from other women who've also disdainfully given up on the brassiere, especially after months of quarantining at home, left the undergarment essentially useless for a lot of women. Jennifer Carpenter is going to appear in the Dexter revival, even though she died in the original series finale. Well, they brought back his dad all the time in flashbacks, so why not her too? This is one of those things where you look and you go, huh? Wait a minute. A guy who's been in professional comedy for, what? It's over 30 years from the Police Academy movies. Didn't those come out in the mid-80s? So why was Michael Winslow, and the guy who does the sound effects, you know, why was he on America's Got Talent last night as a contestant? Did they make any damn sense? Conor McGregor, 33 today, trying to get his ankle screwed back onto his leg. Matthew Fox from Lost, also party of five, but boy, was he good in We Are Marshall. He's 55 today. Jackie Earle Haley, I think the first time I saw him was in Breaking Away, the great story of the bicycle race in Indiana. He's 60 today. Jane Lynch, 61. B.B. Buell, you would call her a groupie and you'd be right. She, shall we say, gave the keys to the temple to Todd Rundgren, Jimmy Page, David Bowie, Iggy Pop, Rod Stewart, Elvis Costello, Steven Tyler. And those are just the ones we know about. She's 68 today. A 68-year-old groupie. Where does that line form? And in 1995, and this is one of my favorite stories to tell. So Bob Costas' first wife, who was a real, real sweet, is a real, real sweetheart, does a lot of work with the Head First Foundation. This is an organization that raises money and awareness for people who have head injuries, especially kids. And they raise money and awareness, and they have big fundraisers, and it's a big charity. And Randy Costas does a lot of work with them and always has. So she overheard me on the radio saying, hey, and this is 1995, I'm going to Los Angeles this weekend to interview Kevin Costner for this new movie called Waterworld. Now, let's just put that aside for a minute and just deal with the Randy Costas thing. So Randy says to me, and she's such a sweetheart, you can't say no to her. She says, hey, when you go out there, is there do you have any Field of Dreams memorabilia? I'm like, yes, I do. I've got one of those little Louisville Slugger bats, you know, those things that are about, a foot and a half long. And they usually have some sort of logo. And I had a couple of Field of Dreams ones. And I said, yeah, why? She said, would it be possible for you to get Kevin to autograph one of those Field of Dreams little bats, those little Louisville Sluggers, and then bring it back, and then we could use it in this big auction we have coming up? I was like, Randy, anything for you. Absolutely. Be happy to do it. So I throw the thing in the suitcase. This is 1995. And, I go out there to the movie. Now we see the movie on Friday night, and people are like, what the hell is this? You may recall that Waterworld did not get good reviews, and we were the first ones to see it. We were sort of scratching our heads going, what are you guys doing here? The movie, shall we say, did not work. And on top of it, it was very, very expensive to make because somebody forgot to tell Kevin Costner, when you're filming on water as opposed to land, that gets really, really complicated. And in fact, one of the big props in the movie, this giant, it's sort of like a floating prison, I guess you would call it. The thing sank in the middle of filming the movie. So they had to make another one. And the cost of the movie started going up and up and up. And you'll recall the words Waterworld and Blockbuster never going to be mentioned in the same sentence. So anyhow, we see the movie on Friday night. I get up on Saturday, put my little suit on, and I go downstairs and I get ready to start doing the interviews for the movie, which included Dennis Hopper, by the way. That was pretty cool. I just saw him about a year ago on an episode of Petticoat Junction that was showing on MeTV. And I'm like, that's Dennis Hopper. And they made Easy Rider in 69. This thing was maybe 2 or 3 years prior to that. So Dennis Hopper in an episode of Petticoat Junction. But anyhow, I digress. So I'm doing all the interviews and everything's going great. And now it's my turn to go in to see Kevin Costner. And I'm sitting there in the hallway waiting my turn, sitting in a little chair there. And a security guy, a very, very unamused looking, extremely large black man, talking into his sleeve, walks over to me and says, you can't take that in there. And I said, looking down innocently at my Louisville Slugger, I was like, why not? He says, because you could use it as a weapon. And being the wise guy that I am, I said, oh, come on, the movie wasn't that bad. And he didn't laugh and he didn't smile. And then, of course, now I'm trying to mop up and I explain to him what I'm doing with it. And the guy still says no, Anyhow, I went in, I left the bat outside, went in and did the interview. Kevin Costner was great. I told him what I needed. He's like, sure, bring it in. So I brought it back in from the hallway. He autographed it. I gave it to Randy Costas. Somebody has that in their possession right now and donated a lot of money to the Head First Foundation in the process. And everybody goes away happy. This guy thought I was going to beat Kevin Costner to death with a Louisville Slugger.
The A-List Interview with JC and the Morning Show Graham.
Academy Award winner Kevin Costner on violence in movies.
I think what my movies do is they show violence to be what it really is, and in certain instances, that it affects lives.
With consequences.
It has consequences that somebody dies and somebody else is affected by it. Their life changes forever, and that there's a sickening quality to the loss of somebody that you know is a good man or a good woman, or that even of a horse dying. It's good that our children know that when bullets fly, people get hurt.
Okay, it's another one of those national surveys. U.S. News and World Report does an annual ranking of the best cities to live in, and for the second year in a row, well, I'll tell you what it is here in just a couple of seconds, because they rank quality of life and cost of living. Here's the top 10. Portland, Oregon at number 10. Sarasota, Florida at number 9. I was just in Sarasota about 6 months ago. I would not describe it as one of the top 10 cities to live in. Everybody's 160 years old in that place. Portland, Maine at number 8. How could the quality of life be great in Portland, Maine, where the summer is about 3.5 hours long? Number 7, Naples, Florida. That's pretty nice. A little on the ritzy side. Colorado Springs at number 6. Austin, Texas at 5. Austin is a very, very cool town. Fayetteville, Arkansas. Never been there. Hard to believe that anything in Arkansas would be in the top 100. Huntsville, Alabama. It ranked higher in value than any other city in the top 10, but now you're living in Alabama. The Raleigh-Durham area in North Carolina, that doesn't surprise me. And number 1, Boulder, Colorado. And I've been there a couple of times, and it indeed is a great place. And if you're a lesbian, it's even better, because you start getting up there and it turns into a lot of boots, jeans, and flannel shirts. I don't know what's going on in the fast food industry these days, but we had the story the other day about the entire Burger King staff on the little sign out front where they can, you know, hang those letters and tell you that, you know, Whoppers are 50% off or whatever the case may be. They put up a sign that said, "We all quit. Have a nice day." Now, here comes Taco Bell in Nashville setting off fireworks inside the that's funny. They called it a restaurant in this story. Wow. The explosion started a fire which caused more than $30,000 in damage. 25-year-old Courtney Mays was the shift leader, and she's been arrested and charged with felony aggravated arson. Police expect to make more arrests in the coming days. I probably shouldn't laugh. A suspicious package locked down a bridge in South Carolina for 3 hours on Saturday. It turned out to be an abandoned liposuction machine. And if you haven't heard, this story is going viral again. A 48-year-old married mother claims she makes $4,200 a month by selling videos of herself farting online. She even follows a special diet to help her, and they have this word in quotes, performance. And now, for no particular reason, the SpongeBob TV show theme in Arabic.
من يسكن البحر ويحبه الناس. لونه أصفر مربع حساس. لو كنت تبحث عن مراح البحار. فهيا للسطح وكن كالمحار. هيا.
So damn funny. All right. I am frequently asked who are the most beautiful actresses, comedians, movie stars, whatever the case may be, that I've ever had the opportunity to interview. And that's a very, very tricky question, because some women are beautiful, like Nicole Kidman, something like that, very statuesque. But then you have a whole separate category of women who maybe aren't necessarily as naturally beautiful, but they're incredibly sexy. And I already told you, the most overall beautiful woman I ever had the chance to interview in person was Yasmine Bleeth from Baywatch. She sort of had the whole thing. She had a beautiful face. She just said, oh, that keister, by the way, going into the Keister Hall of Fame. And she was very fun, bubbly, and vivacious, great personality. Now, unfortunately, she was hooked up with Richard Grieco at the time. And then eventually, I mean, we all know the story. She got arrested outside of Detroit with a bunch of drugs. And now when you see her, it's just shameful what she has allowed to have happen to herself. And that's the only way I will describe it. But it's a shame. It's just a damn shame. Because there was a time, as I said, where out of all these hundreds and hundreds of people that I've had the opportunity to be in the presence of, and she's number one. That is really saying something, I think. But now you get into the whole sexy thing. And now you're talking about Rosanna Arquette. And what a trip she is, in addition to having world-class breasts, or at least she did back in the day, and those lips. You know, guys go crazy for big lips on beautiful women, and she had those too. And she wasn't shy about letting the world see what God had given her. How's that for being diplomatic, okay? Back in 1998, we had a chance to talk to the lovely Rosanna Arquette. Today's JC A-List interview of the day.
Girl, I'm man.
Oh, man. What an intro.
She's blushing all the way from New York, ladies and gentlemen. Miss Rosanna Arquette. Oh, man. Oh, man. Do we like you here in St. Louis, Rosanna? Good morning and welcome.
Good morning to you.
Somebody told me to ask you. Apparently, you were on a talk show or something recently, and you said, you know what I'd really like to do? Yeah, I'm an actress, but you know what I'd really like to do? I'd like to be a disc jockey. What is that all about?
I have a DJ mixing board, and I've always been a frustrated DJ, I have to say. I mean, in that I just love programming music. That's what I love. I don't need to do the talking part. More just the playing.
Management
the
type. Yeah. She's looking to be management.
I want to I want to be there, you know, putting the music on and just...
I've been a frustrated DJ for 23 years. Yeah. That's part of the problem. Yeah, we're just still sitting here.
Now, so I have a request.
Okay.
An old Led Zeppelin song, Over the Hills and Far Away.
Oh, absolutely. We'll play it all the time.
We'll do that in a heartbeat.
Okay, great.
John, my producer, is digging for that one right now.
Okay, great.
All right, let's talk about, first of all, you got a Showtime movie called Floating Away, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But we played a little excerpt there from Pulp Fiction. This is one of these, just tell me about that overall experience. Boy, Rosanna, you were not in that movie long, but boy, did you make an impact.
Oh, that's great. I had a fun time. It was great. And, you know, it was just such a great cast. And Quentin Tarantino, of course, is a wonderful director. And we laughed a lot. It was good.
First time I think I ever noticed you was in The Executioner's Song, which was also the first time most people saw Tommy Lee Jones, the Gary Gilmore story. That's actually available in video stores, a couple of different versions of that. And you just seem to me like you're one of the... And this is probably about the best compliment you can give an actor or actress, and that is that you have always taken chances. Is this something that you decided early on that you were going to do, or did you just kind of fall into that?
No, I always... I'm just attracted to... The scripts that are more interesting to me are the ones that just have a little bit more depth and character. I mean, I've done some little fluffy things here and there, and you know, to pay bills. But I really try to stay away from that as much as possible, and just go for it. Now that I'm a mother, the roles are more interesting to me, and I feel like my work is a little deeper than maybe it was a few years ago. Just being a mother, it just, I don't know, just helps a lot.
And will being a mother curtail your propensity, I guess you would say? And I don't know if this is your deal or if it's kind of scripts that you see or whatever, but you have had your shirt off in an awful lot of movies. And
I know. I was just, yeah, you know what? And
I'm not complaining, by the way.
And it's going to stop now.
Oh, so is the interview. Goodbye.
Damn the luck. Goodbye, Rosanna. Nice talking to you.
It's got time for the body double. You know what? It just, boy. But a lot of films are like that. It's just the way it is. And if it's, nudity sometimes is really important to the script, but when it's just gratuitous, I don't do it. But the times that I've done it, it really was part of the character. So I'm not a prude about it.
But you know what? Even in like in a movie like After Hours, where you were, I think you had your shirt off for about a billionth of a second. And trust me, because I freeze framed it and took a good look. That was a great movie, by the way. People always say, JC, you know, at the video store, and I feel like I've seen everything. Is there anything you could recommend? God, rent a movie called After Hours with Rosanna Arquette and Griffin Dunne. And
isn't that funny?
Fabulous piece of work. And unfortunately, it was one of those movies.
And now Griffin's become this big Hollywood director. It was a great experience.
Given the fact that we are a rock station here, we have a little bit of interest in your previous life, I guess you'd say, before you got married. How many years were you with Peter Gabriel?
Well, publicly, we were on and off for 10 years, actually.
10
wow.
Years.
Yeah, a lot of years.
Now, you say publicly on and off. Was he still married at the time or something? Or what?
Yeah, he was separated and, you know, and not living with his wife, but legally married. And then we lived together in England, and his daughters are really good friends of mine.
Let's talk about that ride. I mean, obviously, you're probably on tour and all that kind of stuff. 10 years of being on tour and in the public eye with a big rock star and just going all over the world. What was that whole experience like? You take anything away from that?
Yeah, I've got a great screenplay about it.
Really?
Yes.
So we might see a movie out of this.
Access All Areas, yep.
Oh, really? So yeah, that's the working title?
Yep.
Access All Areas.
I like that too.
You know, that's what it says in the backstage pass.
Right.
And what would we see in the screenplay were it to be made into a movie that maybe we would be shocked?
It's about a woman, someone who gives up their life, you know, to do that. And I'm actually doing an Alison Anders movie that with John Taylor from Duran Duran. He's playing my husband.
All right.
And we're doing that, and I play, you know, an actress that gave up her career to be with her rock star husband. And that's, we're just about to start that next week. And that's kind of exciting. But a lot of women give up their lives for a man. It can be It can be anybody. And so that's kind of the story.
But you don't have regrets from that 10-year period, do you?
Regrets in that, yeah, I think I gave up a little bit of myself to do that, and it probably wasn't a good idea. I don't think anybody should give up their life. You know, it's great to have a mutual, solid relationship that supports each other, and I think it was a little one-sided that I kind of gave up my career, you know, to do that, and it wasn't a great thing to do.
Well, you didn't give up anything, because if you're ever on television or in a movie, I go see the damn thing. I even rented Crash against my better judgment while I was on vacation.
Dear.
My goodness gracious. I mean, taking chances is one thing, and then just doing something like a lunatic is something else. This was about... I'm not even sure what that was supposed to be.
Well, it was...
For people who haven't seen this...
You're going to have to talk to Cronenberg, but it's a great...
This movie won awards, too. Right, it's like people who were like, you know, in well, you were like practically a body brace in that movie, and people wanted to recreate car crashes and have sex in the cars, and it was...
Right.
You know, I don't know. And Rosanna had like a giant scar running up the entire back of her thigh. And again,
it was a comedy.
And again, not her shirt off, but some sort of a bizarre leather thing that just apparently wasn't her size because there was certain parts coming out of it. I mean, it was like I'm watching it going, I'm enjoying watching you in the movie. And again, Rosanna's taking risks, and it's fascinating to watch. But at the end of the movie, you just sit there and go, Crash, huh? Okay, fine.
What was that?
Yeah, it's a pretty strange movie. It was. But that was another fun experience. I actually say I had a great time making that movie.
I would imagine you'd have some laughs doing that. All right, now let's talk a little bit about the Arquette kids. My God, how many are there any that we don't know about who are going to be in show business?
Yeah, I'm the eldest of five, and I have a brother named Richmond there's me, then my brother Richmond, Patricia, Alexis, and David. And Richmond is also going to be in this Allison Anders film that we're about to start, and he's a really amazing actor. He's like kind of like Brando, Mickey Rourke kind.
And Patricia, of course, is married to Nicolas Cage, who, of course, has now taken over the show business world. And
Patricia's a great actress. They're all so talented. I'm really proud of them.
And Patricia, as a matter of fact, was in a Quentin Tarantino script for True Romance.
Yeah, she's
which was also a fabulous movie. And you got Val Kilmer doing an Elvis ghost and all kinds of stuff. So the whole family is just running wild. Rosanna, I have been a fan of yours, as I said, going all the way back to the Executioner's song. I said, my God, what is this woman going to do next? And you've never disappointed me.
Oh,
and
thank you.
We're all going to be watching on Showtime on Sunday night. The movie is called Floating Away. Get your sweet little thing to St. Louis sometime. We'll do a longer interview, okay?
Okay, that would be great. Then I can guest DJ, maybe.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, cool.
Play all the Zeppelin you want.
You get anything you want. And Over the Hills, Far Away, coming soon. Thanks a lot, Rosanna Arquette.
Thank you.
Oh, to be that beautiful and sexy and have a personality like that on top of it. My, my, my. All right, that's it. The podcast in the can for...
What is today?
The 14th. The 14th of July. 2021 here at jcontheline.com. Please spread the word that we're here every morning at 7 o'clock at jcontheline.com. Enjoy the rest of your day. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The JC Corcoran Podcast.